Before I do get into my talk, I have to tell you that every so often when I take a Sunday off, just to give myself a little bit of time off, a little bit of a break, I usually don't go to church that day, somewhere else. But sometimes I do to see what other places do. But I have a dear friend here, he's going to hate this, but he is taking today off and he actually decided to show up here. He has started out in this auditorium as I did in the early 80s. He was a classmate of mine, student of Dr. Kennedy Schultz, and a number of years ago he went out to start a work in Douglasville, and it is a wonderful, thriving work, beautiful people. And so he took this morning off from there and he showed up here to come back and visit his home church. But if you know anybody in Douglasville who might be interested in this teaching, this man does a superb job of it. He's a marvelous speaker and a marvelous teacher. I just want to recognize my friend Jay Robbins. Jay is over here. Well, today is the final installment in our four-week series on the basic ideas that provide the mental and spiritual foundation for what we talk about here during the rest of the year. And for those of you who may have missed a week or two of this, especially with the weather last week, let me put it all in a nutshell. Here are a few thoughts on spirituality that give us here a slightly different perspective from traditional religious teachings. It's not better, it's just a little bit different. First and foremost, we don't believe in a human-shaped God who judges us, controls us, rewards us, or punishes us. In other words, we don't believe in a God that has hands, a beard, or a lap that we can sit in. We do, however, believe in a loving power that accepts and supports us no matter who we happen to be. We also believe that we have all been given intelligence and free will so that we can choose to live our life in whatever way we want. Now, we don't believe in heaven or hell as actual places, but we do, in fact, believe in them as a state of mind that we sometimes create for ourselves, and we can go in and out of either one of them several times during the course of our life. And finally, we believe that the universe works through perfectly natural, understandable mental, physical, and spiritual laws that work for anyone who uses them the way they need to be used. Now, these are the basics, and if you understand that much, you're on your way. Now, the understanding part of this teaching is not all that difficult because it all really does make sense. And accepting these principles as completely true, once we do understand them, is pretty easy too. It's that last part that gives us problems. It's using or not using the knowledge that we get on a regular basis in every part of our life, large or small, every day and everything we do, that presents the biggest challenge for many of us. That's why the fourth and final section of the introduction of the science of mind is called How to Use It. It meaning God, this power we're talking about. That's what we're going to talk about today as we wrap this series up. But I want to start with a story to sort of get us going in the right direction. I used this story a number of years ago, but it's always good for this specific talk. On a busy Monday morning, there are two cars waiting at a stoplight, one behind the other. And the light turns green, but the man in the front car doesn't notice it because, guess what? He's on his cell phone. So the woman in the car behind him is watching traffic zipping around them on the side, but she's stuck behind this car. They won't let her in and she can't get out. So she starts honking her horn, pounding on her steering wheel, and yelling for the man to move, but he still doesn't notice. So the light now turns yellow, and the woman leans on her horn, makes an obscene gesture with both hands, she's ambidextrous, and she starts screaming out an assortment of four-letter words, some of them hyphenated for maximum effect. And suddenly the man looks up, he sees the yellow light, and he accelerates through the intersection just as the light turns red, and the woman goes berserk as she realizes she's missed her chance to get through the intersection. So instead of just shaking her head and steaming, she rolls down the window, sticks her head out, screaming and shaking her fist at the disappearing car. She rolls up her window, and all of a sudden she hears a tap, tap, tap on her window. And she looks to her left and is looking into the barrel of a very serious gun being held by a very serious police officer. So the officer indicates for her to shut off the car and to keep both of her hands in sight, which she does. She starts to shake. She doesn't know what's going on. So she shuts off the engine, and the policeman orders her out of the car with her hands up. She gets out. He has her turn around, put her hands on the car. Then he puts her hands behind her, handcuffs her, puts her in the back of his patrol car, and takes her to the police station where she is searched, fingerprinted, photographed, booked, and put into a holding cell. Now, after a couple hours, another policeman approaches the cell, and he opens the door for her, and she's escorted back to the booking desk where the original officer is waiting with her personal effects, and he says, "I'm sorry, ma'am, you're free to go. I apologize for bringing you in. But you see, I pulled up behind your car while you were blowing your horn and flipping that guy off and cussing a blue streak at him, and then I noticed the back of your car. I noticed the 'Life is Wonderful' license plate holder, and the Visualize World Peace and War is Not the Answer bumper stickers, and the peace symbol decal on the back window, so obviously I assumed that you had stolen the car." Now, okay. Cute story. Now, this is an excellent example of someone who has heard the truth and probably understands the truth, and even knows at some level that the truth is the right message, but she neglected to use all the things she had learned at a time when it could have made her life flow a lot more smoothly. And as a result, even though she had probably spent many evenings in class, many Sunday mornings in services like this one, studying the spiritual benefits of peaceful coexistence, nonviolence, and our mutual oneness with God, she still ended up experiencing the same kind of day that your typical hardcore sociopath might have experienced, all because she failed to use what she knew was true. So, I always find it interesting when I hear someone say that this teaching is not for everyone. Personally, I think that sounds a little bit arrogant and maybe even a little bit narrow-minded. So what I like to say is that this teaching is for everyone. It's just that some people haven't realized it yet. That's what I like to say. And I say that not because this is better than other teachings. I say that because the things we teach here fit across all teachings. I say that because there are always people who show up here for a month or two and they say they really like it because we talk about things in their life that they would like to change, and we talk about how they could do just that. But then they stop coming rather abruptly when they finally realize that they're going to have to make some major adjustments in both their thoughts and their behaviors before things can get any better. So in the interest of saving at least a few of you some time and energy, I'm going to be very upfront with you about what we're going to be talking about here for the rest of the year. Not the titles of the topics. I'm going to talk about the general overview of the attitude we have here so you can decide right now if this is where you need to be. If you expect to receive anything good out of what we teach here, you are going to have to be willing to change a number of things in your life, all of which are perfectly changeable. But they may be things, including certain thoughts, certain behaviors, and certain assumptions that you have become very attached to. Now, the good news is, this is not necessarily because there's something wrong with you. There may be, but that's not what this is, all right? This is the same for every person, everywhere, without exception. We all have to be willing to change the way we think about the world. We have to be willing to change the way we think about ourselves. And especially, we need to be willing to change the way that we have been thinking about the creative power that we call God. That's what we've talked about over the last 3 weeks. Now, we all know this can be a real challenge. So, because it probably means for most of us that we need to change the way that we have been thinking about things for 20, 30, 40, sometimes even 50 years. It means we need to start listening to things we hear every day from a different perspective. It means we need to start seeing things that we see every single day from a different viewpoint. And finally, it means that we need to change the way in which we relate to a world that constantly seems to be feeding our fear and our frustration and resentment instead of supporting our dreams and desires. In other words, we need to become completely aware of what we are and what we have always been, which is spiritual beings having a human experience living in a universe of infinite possibility. We are spiritual beings living in a human experience in a universe of infinite possibility. That's what we are. That's what we have always been. That's what we always will be. But there's one more very important step we all have to take eventually if we want change to happen. You see, knowing something, even if it's something very exciting or something very, very powerful that we can feel, knowing it doesn't change anything in the world around us. Now, it's an important first step. It gets us thinking in the right direction. It changes the way we look at the world, which is definitely a good thing. But to be really effective in changing our life experience, the knowledge we receive must be put to good use. Because if we can't figure out how to use what we have learned to get this power to do what it does so we can create a better life for ourselves and a better world for everybody everywhere from here on out, if we can't do that, then there's not much point in wasting our time or energy trying to learn about it. We can forget about all those high-sounding spiritual ideas like self-actualization and manifestation and co-creation. Because any religion or any spiritual practice or any philosophy that only works at the theoretical level is absolutely worthless. It's got to be part of our everyday life. Sunday morning by itself doesn't cut it. Why else would we study it and practice it if we couldn't use it in our life? Now, Dr. Ernest Holmes, who founded this teaching, for those who are here for the first time, he knew this very, very well. In fact, in the first sentence of this section I'm talking about today, he says this, the very first sentence. He says, "One of the great difficulties in the new order of thought is that we are likely to indulge in too much theory and too little practice." So just in case you were wondering, I want to assure you that this is not a theoretical or intellectual teaching. What we talk about here is practical and it works. Now, I know that some people don't see it that way because they spent years going to classes and coming to church on Sunday and their life didn't change at all. No matter how many books they read or how many seminars they went to or how many CDs they listened to, things didn't get any better. Now, if you talk to these people for 10 or 15 minutes, you will figure out very quickly that even though they understood it very well, they could spout it back to you exactly the way I say it or Dr. Schultz said it or anyone else, even though they memorized the books and they could quote you all of the spiritual laws, they never actually used any of it because they didn't think it applied to them. That was the problem. So when they finally moved on to someplace else, still looking for the right answer, they had shelves full of books, but a heart full of anger. They had a mind full of facts, but a mind obsessed with being a victim. They knew all the metaphysical principles taught by Ernest Holmes and Chopra and Oprah, the dynamic duo, you know, and Abraham, and Marianne Williamson, and Wayne Dyer, and the Dalai Lama, and all the rest of them, but they could never take responsibility for creating the multitude of problems that remained in their life. They wouldn't take that responsibility. In some ways, it reminds me of a quote by Mark Twain, where he said, "The man who does not read is no better off than the man who cannot read." The one who does not read is no better off than the one who cannot read. In the same way, the person that hears these principles and learns them and goes to classes who doesn't use them is no better off than the person who doesn't know anything about them. The results in their life are going to be the same. Everything that we talk about here, everything in classes, Sunday, all the time, is based on the belief that this experience that we are having, that we call life here in the physical world, is a process. It's a spiritual process, and it is a constantly creating process. In fact, life itself is a work in progress. It is a constant work in progress. And that progress, though it has to start in here, in our consciousness, is always showing up out there in the physical, material world, because that's where we see the results of our beliefs and our choices at work. That's where what we do or what we don't do becomes readily apparent if we're paying attention. Now, one of my favorite stories is the one about the city boy who moved to the country. And he wanted to cut down some trees on his property so he could see the lake better. So he goes to the hardware store, and the good old boy at the hardware store says, son, because that's what they say at the hardware store out in the country, he says, son, what you need is a chainsaw. And he says, a chainsaw? He says, yes, sir, here it is. Take this back to your house. It will cut down 10 trees in an hour. Guy says, great. So he comes back 2 days later, all dirty and sweaty, and said, this thing doesn't work. It took me 10 hours to cut down one tree. So the guy behind the counter says, well, let me see it for a minute. And he looks it over, and he takes the rope, and he pulls it, and it goes, vroom, and the guy goes, whoa, what's that noise? You know, all right. Bada boom, bada bing, all right? You know this, all right. Just because we find the right tool, it doesn't mean our problem is solved. We have to know how to use it. We have to know how to use it. Now, Dr. Holmes tells us that the world is an amazing place when we look at it intelligently. He also pointed out, as did all of the great spiritual teachers, that we, each and every one of us, can accomplish amazing things once we learn to use what we already have in the way it's meant to be used. The only problem is we don't use what we have. We call ourselves these enlightened, open-minded, spiritual beings, and then we thoughtlessly give in. And when I say thoughtlessly, I mean without thinking. We automatically give in to all the fear and the anger and the lack and the limitations and the frustration and the blame and the resentment that the world tells us are the truth. We hear it all the time. So what we have to do is to stop living as if these things were the truth, because they're not. They are not. You see, it isn't enough just to be around positive, intelligent, spiritual ideas. We have to take action that is in harmony with those ideas. We have to do our part in the creative process. And our part includes more than just learning how to think or what to think or when to think. Eventually, if we want change to happen in our life, we're going to have to do something about it. We're going to have to step outside of the safe little box that we have created for ourselves. Someone once said that being in a church doesn't make you a Christian any more than being in a garage makes you a car. Have you ever heard that? Well, except for the Christian part, you could apply that here. Slightly different. Believing that this way of thinking works is fine. Being around these ideas is wonderful, but it only works if you work it. Have you ever heard that anywhere before? It applies here too. Some of you know what I mean. So we have to walk the talk if we want positive results. Now, it's beyond me, but some people who come here are surprised by this. You mean I have to do something too? I don't just have to listen and say amen like I did when I was growing up? They are surprised to hear that if we want to learn to use our, if we want to create a better life, we have to learn to use our mind better, which means we're going to have to take charge of it. The mind is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. We need to be in charge of it. So if we want to form a constructive and productive relationship between our invisible spiritual nature and our visible day-to-day life, whether it's in our family, with traffic, at work, with our money, whatever it is, we need to put some real effort into consciously choosing where our attention is focused and what we're going to do about it. For example, if we spend a lot of time thinking about money, but what we're mostly thinking about is that we're afraid of losing it, or we're worried about the stock market, or we're worried about not having enough of it, that's the kind of experience we're going to create, even if we would like to be rich, because our beliefs are the way we create our life. If we think all the time about how much we would like to have a loving relationship, but we also keep focusing on how badly our father treated our mother, or thinking about getting even with our ex who dumped us for 20 years, somebody 20 years younger, if that's the stuff in your mind, we are setting ourselves up for problems. We have the obligation and the responsibility as co-creators with God of our life to focus our mind, that is our thoughts and our feelings, our beliefs and our expectations, on better ideas than the ones we have been obsessed with up until now. Which means we have to consciously and deliberately, you'll hear me say that a lot, consciously and deliberately focus our energy and our attention on better ideas than the ones we hear at work, the ones we read in the paper, the ones we hear in the news, or the ones that show up in conversations with our so-called friends when we're sitting around Starbucks. That's what we have to realize. If we want God, as it works through us, to support us in creating something better in our life, we need to give God something better to work with. That's what we realize. Or else, as that old bumper sticker says, if we always think what we've always thought, we'll always get what we always got. Isn't that nice and musical? So what can we actually do to attract some better ideas? Well, the first thing is, if you want some good ideas, get a lot of ideas and find the good ones that are in there. We might try actively living our life that surrounds in a way that surrounds us with as many good ideas as possible. But to do that, we are going to have to commit, commit ourselves to an ongoing program of mental and spiritual growth. Now, being here on Sundays is a great start, not to be closer to God, but to remind ourselves how we could be thinking. If we're too busy, we need to find the time and to take the time to start to fill our mind with something better than what the world wants to fill it with every day. And then we need to sit our little tuck us down and start thinking about what's in our head, what we are thinking about. Because if what fills our mind on a regular basis isn't working for us, we need to get rid of it. We need to get rid of it, no matter where we got it or how long we've had it or who tells us it's the truth or how attached we are to it. We have to pay attention to the people we spend our time with, to what we're filling our mind with, the movies, all of these things, and then live our life in a better way. Then we need to consciously and deliberately, once again, focus our thoughts and emotions on these better ideas all the time, not just when the stuff is hitting the fan. That's when most of us get real spiritual, when things are going down the tube. You notice? Okay. So try being spiritual when things are going really, really nice. It'll make it easier. And we need to do this no matter how far-fetched it may seem that our life could get better, no matter what our life is like now or what anyone else tells us it'll happen. Now, some people hear this, that they have to commit to a regular spiritual practice, and they say, but that's so hard. And how long is it going to take before I see some results? My answer is the universal answer. It depends. That's what I tell everybody. There is not always an easier, convenient way to do this. My teacher, Kennedy Schultz, used to say, you can't expect to change your life by only doing what is convenient. You can't. Now, if we really want to change, we can always find a way to do it. If it becomes painful enough, we're going to figure it out. Now, if that means we need to get up a half hour earlier each morning so we can pray and meditate, so we can keep our head straight during the rest of the day, then that's what we need to do. If it means signing up for a Thursday class and then actually showing up for a Thursday class, then that's what we need to do. If it means finding a spiritual place where we can feel connected, then that's what we need to do. We need to find it. If it's not here, that doesn't matter. Find it someplace. If we really want this to work, we can't do it halfway. Casual effort brings casual results. Now, some people show up here, and as soon as they find out that we can't fix their life, they go trying to find somebody who can. What they don't realize is nobody can fix your life but you. Any change in our life has to come through us. It's not going to come to us. If we don't have the time to change, it's not going to happen. If we're too tired, too busy, or too distracted, it won't happen. If we're afraid to try something new, it's not going to happen. There is a power and a law that works, but we have to use them consciously to create a specific result. Now, if we go into a room and we're too tired to turn on the light, we're going to end up sitting in the dark. If we leave the office and we sit in our car and we're too exhausted to drive home, 3 hours later, even though we would like to be home, we're still going to be in the parking lot. If we really want to make some changes in our life, but we don't want to put forth the mental, physical, and spiritual effort it takes, we might just as well go on living our old life and try to get used to it. Which is perfectly okay if that's what you want. Now, for the rest of the year, I can't believe it's the end of January already. For the rest of the year, we're going to be looking at how this kind of spiritual thinking applies to all of the different parts of our life. We're going to be talking about why things happen in our life the way they do. We're going to be talking about how we can make a positive difference in our life and in the world simply by being who and what we are. Over the next couple of months, starting next week, I'll be talking about the shadow side of life. We'll be talking about how to attract more love into our life for Valentine's Day. I'll be talking about how complaining affects us, whether we're the one doing it or the one listening to it. We'll be talking about how we can heal those things in our life that need healing, not just short term, but so they don't come back. That's what we need to be doing. Those are the kind of things we talk about here because they are spiritually relevant to our life. They are spiritually important, and these are the things we have the power to change. So if you want to change your life in a good way, I invite you to make some commitments to yourself. I invite you to be here, and I invite you to support this center so that we can bring these ideas to the people who are looking for them, just like you and I were the first day we walked in those doors, whether it was last week or 20 years ago. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. So it is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's just take a moment here for ourselves. A deep breath. Recognizing the ideas that resonate with us, take them for yourself. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others. Realizing that this world in which we live is a world that responds to us. It is a world that is constantly paying attention to what we think and what we believe and giving us exactly what we expect. But we also recognize that this is true whether we know what we are thinking or not. It is true whether we believe things that make us happy or we believe things that make us unhappy. The universe will give us what we are asking for, consciously or unconsciously. So as we recognize this, that this creative power is ready to respond, ready, willing, and able, on a moment's notice to transform our life as we transform our thinking, we recognize that we have a responsibility. We realize that this power is not far off. It is truly with us. It is the thoughts that flow through our mind. It is the love that flows through our heart. It's the life that flows through our veins and the passion that flows through our soul. That is what this power is. It is what we are made of. So we are all individual expressions of spirit existing in this world. And as we begin to see our life as God would see it, as an infinite creative power would see it, we begin to see the problems and the conflicts and the challenges in an entirely different way. We begin to see them as an opportunity to express life in an incredibly powerful, joyful way. We begin to see our life as an opportunity to be prosperous, healthy, happy, and whole, as an opportunity to not only enjoy love as it comes to us, but to let this amazing love inside of us out to touch not just our friends and our family, or the people near to us, but to touch the entire world, because there is no limit to the love that we all have to give. So as we know this truth, I invite you to take a few moments in the silence of your own heart and mind, and in this silence, recognize the presence of Spirit, not as something coming to you, but as something that flows in you, around you, as what you are, and recognize yourself as a powerful, creative being, ready to change what needs to be changed in your life and in the world. Take these moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth as our own. With a deep appreciation for all that we have given and all that we have yet to give, we recognize our part in the world. We recognize that life is a beautiful gift that we are meant to enjoy. And we leave this place today seeing our life as just that. Knowing this truth, we release it now into consciousness. We release it into the law, allowing it to do what it does, which is to direct consciousness, to direct the universe, to direct the law, and allow what we believe to come back to us multiplied abundantly. This is our truth. We accept it and we release it into consciousness, knowing it is so, and so it is.